escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Offer, but they were also apparently, like, getting into the Big 12 might, like, conceivably was going, somebody somewhere was going to put up enough money to get them to pay the exit fee and to fully fund rev share. So, like, yes, all of that and probably other, you know, probably then some, you take all of that into consideration and yes, it didn't work this time, but that should not take away from, you know, what Memphis has done and the position it put itself in to be able to make that offer.
I think the other question, I know Mark and I had discussed this back when he was still co-hosting the show, and he and I discussed it, you know, off the air. Do you have a sense of why the school seems to be the destination that it desires the most is the Big 12? Because to me, that's where I really, you know, I've used the example so many times. It's Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football. It's like, I don't understand why they keep wanting to go back to that one league, but maybe you have a better answer. Do you?
No, I mean, semi-informed speculation. I mean, it's because out of the realistic options, it's the most attractive. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. You know, like, the ACC is kind of on shaky ground right now, or it will be in a couple of years.
I think last Friday proved, I mean, nothing in that North Carolina story was particularly, like, actual, we are learning this news, but the fact that North Carolina was willing to leak that we're looking to get out publicly, like, that shows where they are.
Yeah, and it also shows a potential reason why the Big 12, I can't remember if I said this on with you last week or not, but, like, to me, that also shows, it lends credence to the possibility that the Big 12, the reason why the Big 12 said no to Memphis is because the Big 12 would rather wait and see if a potential ACC implosion could, benefit the Big 12. Like, if North Carolina and, I don't know, Florida State go to the SEC, then, like, you would think the Big 12 could be in position to get Louisville and Clemson.
I'm not sure it's written in stone that Duke's got a future. You know what I mean? If they really are serious about we want to have the best league in the country for basketball, are you telling me that they're gonna pass on Duke?
And I mean, that, like, we're also assuming that the SEC is going to want to take anybody from the ACC. Like, what if we get to 2030 or, you know, a couple years from now, and it's the Big 12 who's bringing in North Carolina and Duke? Then it makes it a little bit more easier. It makes it easier to understand potentially why the Big 12 was hesitant to accept Memphis's offer now. But again, that this is all lots and lots of speculation. Don't know exactly what's going to happen really at all. But yeah, it's I guess as far as, you know, the original question, like why does Memphis keep going back to the well with the Big 12? And I think it's just because it's the most out of the options in front of it. It's the realistic options in front of it. It's the most attractive and the most stable. Like, yeah, they could pitch an offer to the ACC, but again, the ACC, like its biggest brands are trying to get out. And if you get into the ACC, you know, what's it going to be in a few years? Will it have been worth the trouble? Maybe, maybe not. Don't know. But what I do know, what I am reasonably confident of, in saying is that I don't think we have seen the last of Memphis's efforts to exhaust. I don't think they've exhausted all of their, moves in terms of the Big 12 / ACC. I know people are still trying to ring the bell for the Pac-12 and/or the Pac and the Big East.
Yeah.
But has anybody seen anything or heard anything from Memphis that would suggest that Memphis wants to be in the Pac or the Pac / Big East? Like, their ambition is power conference, and there is no ambition short of that. And so I don't think we've seen the last of Memphis's swings at getting into a power conference.
We're wrapping up here with Jason Munns of The Commercial Appeal. Ken, you can go listen to his podcast that they did over The Commercial Appeal on this very topic. So Jeff today wanted to come up with the 10 Memphis figures that are under the most pressure in sports. And I put number one, Mayor Paul Young, the city of Memphis, because I think the single most important issue is the Grizzlies and the Lease. But number two, I lumped them in together, and maybe that was a cop-out, but I said Bill Hargrave and I said Ed Scott, not simply just because of, okay, get them to a power league. What I actually think is more difficult and makes it more pressure-filled, not from a, are these guys going to be employed, but in terms of wanting to do the job and leave it better than you found it. I think forever there was always the idea of, okay, even if you don't move up, you're always going to kind of wind up being the best of the rest. Mm-hmm. And while the American right now, from a financial perspective, is the best of the rest, I'm not confident in saying post 2030 that league is going to be the best of the rest. What I actually think is makes this job so much more complicated is trying to navigate, and honestly, they're probably going to have to do some speculating themselves of, okay, how do we ensure that at the worst case scenario, we're still in the best of the rest? Because I don't think that path's even clear.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I get the distinct impression that Memphis feels like there is some urgency on their, like, I think they feel some sense of urgency to like, you know, get into a different situation than what it's currently in. However, I also think, on the other hand, they know that they've got some time, that if it comes to it, they don't need to panic.
They're in a weird way. They're in kind of the same spot that the presidents of the Big 12 are in, not in the sense of, okay, we, like, in the end, it's like, they're at a spot where it's like, we don't have to leave the American tomorrow just for the sake of leaving the American. They obviously want to get to a better spot, but it's almost they aren't necessarily having to do it by tomorrow for money reasons.
Right. They would rather do it sooner rather than later, but they do still, I think that they still have the benefit of a window that if, like, they could take the next, and I'm just throwing out arbitrary numbers, they could take the next 6 months or year to continue their efforts to get into the Big 12 of the ACC. And if all else fails by that time, it's what, 2020, mid 2026, you know, or thereabouts, I think they would still feel comfortable if it turns out by then that the PAC and or the PAC / Big East, if that turns out to be, you know, by that time, again, we're a year and a half down the road, if it turns out by then that those options are the most attractive and you've kind of done everything you can possibly do on the power conference side and it hasn't worked out, then they can still make that chess move at that time. They don't have to do it today. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about is like, yeah, again, they'd rather do something sooner rather than later on their like best case scenarios, but they don't have to, you know, like they don't have to alter, they don't have to shift course just yet. And that's actually, you know, like, I don't think Pete Thamel was talking out of his rear end when he wrote that story a month or so ago, where he was talking about how Memphis is the first, what do we call it? The key domino or something like that. Like they actually have, it seems like, in a weird way, a little bit of leverage as far as it's...
I think he called him also like the most attractive...
Yeah.
The most attractive G5 team or school, whatever.
Yep. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think, again, I think would they rather not have had that happen the other day, last week? Yes. But at the same time... like I said, I don't think they're done trying to get into a power conference. I think that is still priority number one. And, you know, if last week proved anything, it's that, like, you know, since last September, everybody's been dunking on Memphis saying, well, they don't have it. Like they're not serious about, this whole endeavor. Like they just they're up, it's just more of the same, they can't get it done, blah blah blah. Well, if last week showed anything, it's that actually they are trying, and maybe they can get it done. It just it's entirely possible that they couldn't get it done last week, but that's not to say they can't go back to the drawing board and pull something together that you know gets them where they want to be 6 months from now.
Munz, we appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Jeffrey.
That is Jason Munz, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. All right, let's take a quick break. We've gotten some news on the injury front from DJ Lagway. Want to talk about that, as well as more from the world of sports. Maybe even talk a little Happy Gilmore, too. We'll do all that during the list as well. When we come back right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When New Yorkers buy a place with StreetEasy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
FM, ESPN. There's one last week to take advantage of the Summer of 1,000 engagements going on right now with our friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. The sale will end this Saturday. That means this Saturday is your last chance to save up to 40% off all diamond jewelry and engagement rings. Also, with any purchase of $999 or more, get a free diamond stud, or I should say a pair of free diamond stud earrings with your purchase of $24.99 or more. You can get a free Yeti Tundra cooler. They have lots of great options. Like, you can choose from the 3-carat diamond tennis bracelet on sale right now for only $9.99. That will also get you the free pair of diamond stud earrings. They also have the diamond tennis necklace for $14.99 that will get you a pair of diamond stud earrings. Also, you can check out diamond engagement rings with oval, radiant, and marquee shapes. All of them are hot, hot, hot right now over at Robert Irwin Jewelers, and they have all of them. You can even propose now and pay later with many financing options, like taking up to 60 months to pay. Again, one last week. This Saturday, the sale ends. It's your last chance to save up to 40% off diamond jewelry at Robert Irwin Jewelers and the Summer of 1,000 engagements. See full store, or I should say, see a store for full details, bigger, brighter diamonds, all at better prices at Robert Irwin Jewelers, 5 locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. Let's get into the list. The Memphis Grizzlies. All right, George, over at ESPN's NBA page, Kevin Pelton has graded the off seasons, and for the Memphis Grizzlies, he has given them a B grade. So, the more that I've thought about the off season, let me first tell you what Kevin wrote. So, Kevin would always stress that it is Kevin Pelton's computer that makes the determination rather than he himself, the person.
Sure.
The Grizzlies might take a step back in a loaded West after trading starting guard Desmond Bane, but long-term, Memphis was wise to get 4 first-round picks in return, including a coveted 2026 pick most likely from Phoenix. As we've all mentioned, there are some conditions, but the crown jewel is, if Phoenix goes the way that we think, that would be the pick that's going to be the most desirable. Adding Ty Jerome on a value contract helps replace Bane's shooting and shot creation, and the Grizzlies were able to sign Jaren Jackson Jr. to an extension that pays him less than he could have made next summer as an unrestricted free agent. So, overall, I think if you take a look at it in these terms, if you're just looking at, you let a player of Desmond Bane's caliber go, and while Kevin values draft assets, but what you're bringing back in return, most people would agree the Grizzlies were better the day before they traded Desmond Bane than the day after, which is fine. I think even the Grizzlies would have agreed that. What they were trying to do was position themselves to build a better team in the next 24 months. The more I think about the offseason, I feel kind of like a homer, because the more and more that I've thought about it, I just kind of like what they've done. I think there was an admission of, yes, we wanted to build around these three guys, but circumstances changed, and what everybody has seen throughout the new CBA, you're just not going to be able to have the quality of depth to build the best team possible, to build the best contender possible, with three guys commanding so much money. So, overall, you made the decision of, we have three guys, we want to keep Ja and Jaren, we want to trade Dez. I think that is a rational thing. As we talked about it during the time, I did think it kind of sucked, because Dez was the one guy that I felt like you could see had the give a damn button.
Yep.
But at the same time, they, and I don't want this to be confirmation bias, but it's like, if I were in the same position that they were, I would have made the same choice. I think Jaren is enough of a different type of player that you can't just go find his value. You commit to him. And then I also think that this is true. With all your complaints that you can reasonably have about Ja Morant, I think this is undeniable. You are better off banking on him reaching his prior injury performance than you are selling him off. I think the opportunity cost, I don't think your return is going to be nearly well as good. And I also think that this is true. If Ja has a healthy season, I think Ja's going to be a top 10 player.
Yes. And the thing is, even if he doesn't, I think Ja's overall, doesn't return to exactly the same form as he did pre-injury. Injuries, I guess we could say at this point.
I think plural's probably fine.
I think he's also got the ability and the skill set to perform at an extremely high level as a different type of player. he doesn't necessarily always have to be that 100 miles an hour, get down a hill point guard. He has the handle and he has the playmaking ability to do that a lot more.
I think what it really boils down to me, yes.
He makes players around him better.
Well, and like, there's definitely that. He has the pure point guard instincts of making everything else look easy for everyone else. But I really go back to, in a series where there was not much to extract, the Oklahoma City series, there are multiple moments in time where I can sit there and point to that guy was the best guy on the floor. And if we are operating under the assumption, which I think is somewhat fair to do, if we are going to agree that the playoffs are a different sport,
yeah,
he proved to me, hey, man, at this level, he still can really take over. And that was a series, again, that had the MVP on the floor. And I'm not going to pretend like the Thunder were treating a 1-8 series the same as they did the NBA Finals. But I do take note that against the team that was the champion, there were multiple moments where I could point to they can't do anything with him. And that's the best defense in the league.
By far, mind you, as well. And not just necessarily the best, but also arguably the most physical. And that's been one of the key things.
No question. That was definitely a knock on. Like, you could kind of, the formula for the Grizzlies were, are they playing a good defensive team? And if the answer was yes, it's, are they a physical defensive team? It's like, not usually a good night for the Grizzlies.
I mean, and that was the big thing that we saw during the regular season as well. I mean, look at all the different games with the Clippers where the Grizzlies had a lot of trouble getting through them because they were just a big physical team. And you could say a lot of the same thing about the way that Oklahoma City played last year. And to your point, there was not just points. There was at least a half of a game in one game where John Morant was the best player on the floor by far, bar none.
I think he was also,
and he got undercut.
Granted, the score was, you can make the argument the score was dictating what was happening. But we also saw this with the Thunder throughout the rest of the playoffs where they did build some big leagues, and a couple times they didn't hold on to them, and a couple of times they let them go.
True.
The second half of game two, Ja was fantastic.
He was incredible.
Now, does that mean that had Ja stayed healthy that I believe they were going to beat the Thunder? No, I'm saying I saw enough that makes me feel optimistic. If you can get the healthy year from Ja, if you can get a healthy playoff run, he can be a problem.
What number of games do you put at for a healthy season? Is 65, which, it, so,
I mean, 65 gets him eligible for everything.
The eligibility, what, did they put that at 65 because it's a certain percentage? Is like 70 some odd percent of the games?
I think they chose 65 because they thought that was a number that would allow for the most primetime games to have the players.
That's fair. That's pretty,
I mean,
fair. That's
60,
true.
I don't know if 65.
I don't think it's like, I think it might, it also could have just been a round number. Like, hey, here's a good number to shoot for. But
so it's not even a, so that would be 79%.
Okay.
My guess is what they did is they started taking a look at, since it's not like a clear percentage.
Yeah.
Like, all right, they didn't just say you have to play 75% of the games. My guess is what they did was they started saying, let's take a look at guys that play 65 games. Like, is that a reasonable number? And they would sort through and they just stumbled upon, okay, 65.
65 is probably pretty reasonable.
Correct.
Or fair.
Correct. My thing is, it's not even necessarily 65. If you got him to 60, well, that's more than we've had in years past.
Yep. This past year was, what, 50?
I think it was 50 on the nose.
I think it was 50.
I think we looked it up. It was 50 on the nose. It more comes down to, it's like, how many of those games are, like, high quality? Like, I feel like 65 is the number that you should just kind of settle upon because it's like, all right, I'm asking you to basically play a shade under 80% of the season. But then there's this weird reality. It's like, well, what if he plays 65 games and then the last week of the year or even the first playoff game, he gets banged up again and you're left with wondering what if? Because I do think it is also fair to point out this. With Ja, you have an undersized guard. And to your point, like, can he change his style of play? Sure. But the reality is, he is still an undersized guard in a very a league that has a lot of big people.
Yes.
And the bodies get knocked around.
Yeah.
And they're allowing for more contact than they have in years past. So to sit there and act like it's a coincidence he gets hurt, I also think is misguided. But at the same time, I would rather bet on the, to me, the high end of betting on Ja getting a healthy year, having a healthy playoff run, that outweighs what you could have gotten on the other end.
Had they decided to stick with the same formula as before. And I think to me, that's the biggest thing is instead of the Grizzlies trying to stay their course and try it, you know, in a way almost think, okay, we've drafted, we've developed, we've gotten these guys in at a young age and done our best to build the team around these three guys. Instead of doing that, which they've done that in the past where they say, the way that we've done this is the right way, so this is how we kind of have to stick around and do it. They're looking at the rest of the league. They are, I don't want to say being necessarily totally reactive, but they're almost getting ahead of it because if you have all three of those guys on the contract where some other teams are, the teams that are truly being reactive, the Grizzlies are at least getting a step ahead of it and saying, look, Ja and Jaren are at a young enough age where in the NBA where development, it seems like, usually goes pretty quickly for these teams to whether keep or leave on some of these young players, they're getting ahead of it. They're saying our two star guys are, what, 26, 27 in that age range? Even if it takes one extra year off of those contracts, which we think we have these two guys at a good number at, the end result should look better than it does, in this case, what was last year or the year before that.
Yeah. The other thing that I like about what they've done is, okay, they have clearly to me, they've emphasized getting more athletic, which is something that I think that they clearly needed to do. And I think they've also rightly realized, listen, if we're going to build a team around Ja Morant, we've got to have other great defenders around him.
We can't just have the one help.
And my whole deal is, do I really think SGA is like one of the great defenders? No, but what I do think that they are very smart with, they always have four great defenders around him, and it allows him to be extremely risky on defense. And so he gets a lot of the cheater defensive stats. Steals, like letting the guy go pass, like rip the ball away. Like it allows him to be much more aggressive, which we've seen Ja have the ability to do.
Yes, and that's in a way part of what makes him good on both ends.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a level of hand-eye that there is a plenty of guys in the league that don't necessarily have.
It is a superpower.
And I do think building around that type of formula, the two guys, and not even necessarily a bunch of depth pieces who are kind of just there, but the Grizzlies are also banking on potentially low-floor, high-ceiling players.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave a bunch of money to Santi. We've seen part of what his floor could be, and it is a seventh, eighth guy, but we also saw at points last season part of his ceiling. There was a good stretch last year where, what was he averaging, 15?
I mean, in the Lakers playoff series, he was one of their best scoring options.
And not many guys who are 7 foot can, what, he hit like 38%?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest problem with Santi is they haven't quite figured out ways to get him and Jaren to play the best together, but what if you have longer defenders around him now?
Which it looks like they're going to have, at the very least, at the two and the three.
And to me, it's like, okay, is Cedric Coward the ultimate gamble of, like, if it doesn't work with him, they're toast? Well, no, but I do like the gamble that they took. They're not asking him to be, to me, it's the same logic that I used with Zach Edey.
Yeah.
When the Grizzlies took Zach Edey, I was not expecting Zach Edey to be an all-NBA player. If he does, that's great. That's even better. But what you were asking him to do was they needed a rim protector. They needed, you're always going to need a true rebounder when you've got Jaren to the lat that frees up Jaren. It's when he works his best. It's when the team works its best. And they need somebody to set screens. Now, what does stink is you're starting the year without.
Which, that type of thing to me, those are the parts that look reminiscent to Grizzlies seasons past. And I don't, but there's, we can't really hold that against the front office, can we?
No, I also think that, I think where everybody got misguided was, all right, the playoff breakdown was usually half-court offense.
Yeah.
And so everyone bought into the idea that scheme can fix a half-court offense, particularly late in playoff games. Just I've just yet to see an example where that's the case. Like, it's guys making unbelievable shots.
Yeah, sometimes you got to just let the guys go to work.
And I think back to when did they play their best basketball? It's the 21-22 season. And this allows them to kind of recreate something that looks more similar to that. All right, anything else on the Grizzlies offseason?
We got the preseason schedule.
We did get the preseason schedule. All I took note of is these are the preseason games that I'm going to forget about in the middle of football season.
Yeah.
So we have October 6th and 8th, I believe.
The 11th, I think, was one. I think
there's a Boston. Boston, I think, is in the middle.
There were, so it's going to be, what, six games, three at home, three away?
Correct. And I want to say the aways are like Charlotte.
I know for sure Charlotte is in there. Let me... I always have to shudder every time I go to the Memphis
page. All
right,
here we go. Monday, October 6th, the first preseason game is against Detroit.
Yep.
Wednesday, October 8th, Boston. Saturday, October 11th, against Atlanta. All of those games are at 7 p.m. The Grizzlies do have single game tickets for preseason home games available on sale at a later date. The Grizzlies will also take on the Hornets at First Horizon Coliseum in Greensboro. I saw Monday Night Raw there back in 2012.
Oh, it's only five games. My bad.
And then they will also play Miami at the... Do you say it...
Is it the Kaseya Center?
Do you say it Kaseya?
I think it's... Is it Kaseya, I think?
I don't know. I know it's the artist formerly known as FTX Arena.
Yeah.
Was previously known as American Airlines Arena, I believe.
You could say that for a lot of these arenas. But it is just the five games. I don't know how much we will be able to take from those. But other than that, we've kind of covered everything else that's happened so far. I mean, the Zion pull-in and PJ Hall move, we talked about that last week. I don't have much else from the offseason so far. We'll see once we get into actual training camp, media day, things like that coming up.
All right, Bryce Harper. All right, so this is the story making the rounds today. Jeff Passan of ESPN reports that Philadelphia Phillies star Bryce Harper stood nose-to-nose with Rob Manfred, the commissioner of the Major League Baseball, during a meeting between the Major League Baseball commissioner and the team last week, telling him to, quote, get the F out of our clubhouse, end quote, if Manfred wanted to talk about the potential implementation of a salary cap, sources told ESPN on Monday. The confrontation came in a meeting, one of the 30 that Manfred conducts annually in an effort to improve his relations with every team's players, that lasted more than an hour. Though Manfred never explicitly said the words salary cap, end quote, sources said the discussion about the game's economics raised the ire of Harper, one of Major League Baseball's most influential players and a two-time National League MVP. Ahead of the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement between the MLB and the MLB Players Association on December 1st, 2026, multiple owners have stumped for a salary cap in baseball, the only major men's North American sport without one. The MLBPA vehemently opposes a cap, which it argues serves more as a tool to increase franchise values than to lessen the game's large disparity between high and low spending teams. So there's a couple of things here. Number one, I think there's a lot of people that are saying, go Bryce, go. And
as both of us are haters of Rob Manfred.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that.
So here's where I do think it gets to be interesting. Do we think, because I think there's this thought of in baseball, if you have an owner that's not willing to spend, you're going to be bad. George's team would agree to disagree. You're not consigned to your fate. But I think we can all acknowledge, even as a Rays fan, it's hard.
Oh, it is. Yeah, if they spent more money, they'd probably be better.
Correct. I do also think that there's probably something to the claim. All the salary cap does is increase the franchise values, which I also think is true, because if you look at the rate at which all the other franchises have gone up, baseball lags. And so I'm not saying that that is an unmerited claim. I do also think this. There's become like this weird war of either you're for the players or you're for the owners. And my thing is, am I for Major League Baseball owners? No, But you know what I am for? My team. And that's where this starts to draw the line of the player empowerment era is not better for the teams. It's not better for the fans.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not ever going to say, like, these people do or don't deserve money, but I do think that gets lost in the equation. The more that you steer things into just the haves and the have-nots, well, get used to the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Mets.
The Phillies, in a way. I mean, the Phillies spend. They spend.
The Cubs are in this weird thing where they've tried to do their TV deal independently, and it's kind of backfired. So, like, the Cubs still should be spenders, but they're...
They should be, but they've also done a really good job lately of finding young talent, and now they've got a great manager.
Now, and I also want to be very clear. The Dodgers don't just win because they outspend everyone. They're also smarter.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they have...
A fantastic general manager. Dave Roberts is a good manager himself.
The most money, and they're well run.
Yes.
That's why they are the monster that they are. But, like...
And I think the Mets are starting to push that way. They're getting more well run. I mean, it's, you know...
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be the issue of, like, if you're a big spender and then the guys that you spend on don't deliver or get hurt, well, you're...
Yeah, that's...
I don't know. That's tough. I do think Manfred does have a point of it is going to help competition.
Yes, and we see that in every other league. The parity has gotten a lot better to the point to where up until pretty, you know, midway through or even late in the season, we don't know who's going to win and who's going to make the playoffs, things like that. I wonder, did he say apron or did he say cap? I don't know what phrasing he used. Oh, is it a competitive luxury tax of some kind?
I want to say maybe it's a salary floor. He has a term that he's been using.
The floor? Honestly, to me, the floor, I think, for baseball would make a little bit more sense because that would push these owners that really don't spend, namely the Rays, the Marlins.
And there are some things that effectively work like that, just not year in, year out.
Exactly.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some football again. We got a big injury to DJ Lagway that I want to talk about, as well as a couple other things from the weekend. We'll discuss some football when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, George, couple of news and notes from the world of football. This from Zach Alberverdi of On3 over. He covers the Florida, I should say he runs the Florida team site Gators Online. Florida sophomore quarterback DJ Lagway is dealing with a new injury ahead of training camp, Gators Online has learned. The injury considered minor but may limit Lagway at the start of fall practices this week, according to multiple sources. Of course, everyone will want to point out it's not fall practice, but that's another one that I'm lost in all that argument. I don't. If you say fall camp, I know what you mean. Like I get what everyone's saying
before the fall season. It's not hard.
I've never had a problem with
me neither
that one whatsoever. Lagway suffered a calf injury during a team run last week and has been in a boot the sources said. His injury is not thought to be serious, but it's unclear how much practice time Lagway could miss as a result, if any. Lagway did not attempt any passes during the spring while nursing a shoulder injury and a lower body injury, according to Florida coach Billy Napier. He resumed throwing in late April and said, quote, he's feeling great heading into the fall. So this is one of those ones where I don't know if the team is weird. I don't know if the injuries are weird. There's a lot of weirdness surrounding the health of DJ Lagway.
Yes, and I was about to bring that up because we got those reports earlier on in the summer about his shoulder.
Correct.
Right? And, excuse me, correct me if I'm wrong, the shoulder injury was one that happened at the end of last season, but we're still hearing something, nothing about it.
Yes. Like, well, I don't know if it happened at the end of the season.
Or was it like during a workout? Or
it happened during the football season. I'm unclear of the timeline. The shoulder was different than when he had the hamstring.
Gotcha. And this one is his calf.
Correct.
Which,
scary. I'm always worried about pre-calf. Now, I will say, I'm always a little bit less worried about calf of a 20 to 21-year-old than I am of a 30-year-old basketball player.
Always, but...
but it's not great.
No, it's not great. And going back to, like you said, a 30-year-old basketball player, it's, you know, maybe it's just because it's so visible now and, like, recency. Still scary.
Well, there's always this weird thing of, like, they'll always hide behind, we're trying to protect the kid, we want to protect his future. And it's like, I get that. Do y'all really think the NFL is not going to do a medical? Like, are they not going to have access to it? Like,
they know a lot.
And then, I mean, I guess maybe that's the next step in the combine is people just refusing medicals, but it's like, that's going to bring a few red flags.
A few to me. Like, sure, I would say not throwing, not doing things, fine, whatever. We see that every year. Not doing a medical? Yeah, that's throwing off the biggest red flag.
And I'm willing to bet they're going to work pretty hard to figure out a way to get those medicals. Okay, also from the world of local football, but not in college, we did get the news today that the Titans have waived Treylon Burks, who fractured his collarbone over the weekend. And now everyone is revisiting the A.J. Brown trade. And now, according to Schefter, we've got the infographic up, the A.J. Brown trade revisited. The Eagles received A.J. Brown, and they signed him to a $100 million extension. The Titans received the number 22 18th overall pick, which was Treylon Burks. The 2022 third-round pick, which they traded to the Jets with the 2022 number 26 overall for Roger McCreary, Nicholas Pettit Frere, and Kyle Phillips.
So, I feel like there's also potentially something missing from that graphic. I don't know what it is, though.
I mean, the other aspect of it is it did get the GM fired.
It did.
It caused a power. Like, that's the thing. Not all Titans brass. Vrabel clearly wanted A.J. Brown back.
Oh, yeah.
Robinson makes the decision that he did, and it winds up with him losing his job.
I think that's one of the biggest things to look at, too, with it, other than the fact that, to me, the Eagles side also is missing the fact that they've been to the Super Bowl twice and won it once.
Correct.
Most recently this year, in which A.J. Brown was awesome. But it completely shifted the Titans franchise. New general manager, new head coach, now new quarterback, and potential quarterback of the future.
I kind of hate it for Treylon Burks. I liked him at Arkansas.
I really liked him at Arkansas. He was fun.
And again, some of this is injury, but like his rookie year, he wasn't very good. Then he's had injuries after that.
But how many rookies are truly, I mean, again, he was picked in the 20s.
Yeah.
How many of those guys in the 20s immediately step in, and especially with the added pressure of, hey, by the way, we just traded a 1,000-yard receiver to get you.
Well, it's almost like,
okay, that's a lot of pressure.
We need to set aside a different category. It's like receivers drafted out of LSU. Like, let's set them aside because
yeah, those
like
count. All those work they're out. They're freaks. They don't count.
Yeah, those all work out. But I mean, yes. I mean, that's the whole thing is that Justin Jefferson goes 22. Jalen Reagor went 21. Well,
hey, one of those came from TCU?
And one of them came from?
LSU.
Yeah.
Jalen Reagor did go to TCU, didn't he?
Yes. That was also the pick that we got the video of Mike Zimmer laughing when they took Jalen Reagor, and then he just went in and casually turned in the card and said Justin Jefferson.
Very quickly as well.
He wasted 0 seconds. Also, news from the NFL, Baker Mayfield says that they've converted his contract into guaranteed money. We've not quite gotten the specifics. It's obviously probably going to be an extension, but he was not guaranteed any money this year. They've now turned it into guarantees. Basically, they're doing the thing that everyone does. They're converting it into a signing bonus to give themselves some cap room, and then Baker's probably going to work on an extension.
Yeah, my big thing for that is I think that's just rewarding one of the more productive quarterbacks in the last handful of seasons. Tampa Bay, it seems like, has done great, great things with Baker. To the point to where, how many offensive coordinators have they lost now? Two? Is it back-to-back years?
Cohen is at Jags.
Was Canales not there before, who's now with Carolina?
So, Canales, yes. And I think Canales was only play caller for 1 year, though.
That's what I mean, back-to-back seasons.
I want to say, though, he had a...
Cohen was last year.
Is this his second or third year at Tampa?
Baker?
Yeah.
Third. Going into third,
his 2 years, yes.
Yeah. Third different offensive coordinator because he is just putting up the numbers. Listen, good for you, Baker. Good for you, Baker.
Someone's had the stock since day one. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, we got to go to Jameis Winston from over the weekend. He was asked this question on, I believe, Saturday's practice. No, it might have been yesterday's, Sunday's practice. You've always been an explosive quarterback, but the knock on you has been the interceptions. How do you manage that, and what is Dable's system? What in Dable's system makes it easier for you to get the ball into any window? My guy, Jameis. The biggest thing is just the decision-making. What is the decision? I'm not an outcome-based quarterback. It's like, what is the decision? If I threw an interception, was it the right decision? If I threw an incompletion, was it the right decision? And don't worry about the outcome. Sometimes the outcomes can overweigh a lot of the stuff, and people can't have, but what is my decision? If my decision is good, then we can learn from that, and we can grow from that. I think there's one thing that we can all universally agree upon, and that is Jameis Winston has never, ever been an outcome-based quarterback.
Honestly, this is not the Jameis one I thought it was going to be when you first said Jameis Winston. Did you see the clip of him talking about Taysom Hill and Jackson Dart being just two guys from Utah coming
out
in to cover finish off drives for him?
The whole presser was...
Jameis is amazing. I love him.
The whole presser was amazing. Want to thank Jason Munz for being on the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When New Yorkers buy a place with StreetEasy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.